Yes, I said. He hurt you. It was just some glass. I touched the smarting cut. Will you find out what happened? He nodded, still looking at my cheek. There was something in his eyes that struck me. A darkness. A tension. He was thinking of something else. He wouldn't meet my gaze. The wound transfixed him. This will scar if it is not treated. His gloved fingers held my jaw. I will bring something to clean it. And you'll find out about Kraz. Yes. Our gazes met for the briefest instant. My brow creased, and my lips formed a question. In the end, I didn't ask it. I will return as soon as I can. He stood. I recommend you clean yourself. There are clothes in there. He indicated the armoire. I glanced down at my uniform. The gilet was covered in pollen. Damning evidence of my transgressions. Right, I said. And keep that wound clean. He was gone before I could respond. I got to my feet and approached the mirror. The laceration was a livid shock against my skin. Did it bother him to see me like this, even after what Jax had done? Did he see my face and think of his own scars? The ones on his back? The ones he kept hidden? A cloying smell sifted from my hair. The pollen. I locked the bathroom door, kicked off my clothes, and ran a steaming bath. My leg shook. I'd skinned my knee while climbing. I sank into the hot water and washed my hair. Old bruises throbbed under my skin, while new ones formed on top of them. I took a few minutes to soak the warmth into my rigid muscles, then picked up a fresh cake of soap and scrubbed away the sweat and blood and pollen. My sallow, battered frame looked no better for the attention. Only once the water had drained did I start to feel calm. Should I talk to him about the train? He might try and stop me. He'd brought me back when he could have let me go. On the other hand, I needed to know whether or not the train was guarded, and whereabouts in the meadow I could find the entrance. I didn't remember anything from the training session. No hatch, no door. It must be hidden. When I returned to the chamber, I found the clean yellow uniform in the armoire. The pollen had been swept off the carpet. I sank onto the daybed. I had dispatched Kraz Sargas, blood heir of the Rephaim, with a single shot between the eyes. Until that moment, I'd thought they were too strong to kill. It must have been the pollen. The bullet had just finished him off. By the time I'd left the tower, the corpse had been rotting before my eyes. A few grains of pollen had putrefied him. When the door opened, I started. Warden was back. His face held all the shadows in the room. He came to sit beside me. He took a swab, dipped it in a jar of amber liquid, and dabbed the blood from my cheek. I looked at him in silence, waiting for his judgment. "Kraz is dead," he said, betraying no emotion. My cheek gave a hot twinge. "He was heir apparent to the Blood Sovereignty. You would be publicly tortured if they found out. They know about the missing supplies, but you were not seen. The day porter has been whitewashed." "Does anyone suspect me?" "Privately, perhaps. But they have no proof. Fortunately, you did not use your spirit to kill him, or your identity would be obvious." My shivering intensified. Classic me. Killing someone that important without even knowing who he was. I'd end up as a death mask if Nashira got wind of this. I looked up at him. "What did the pollen do to Kraz? His eyes, his face." "We are not what we seem, Paige." He held my gaze. "How long was there between the application of the pollen and the shooting?" "The shooting. Not the murder." He'd said the shooting, as if I'd been a bystander. "Maybe 10 seconds. What did you see in those 10 seconds? I tried to think. The room had been thick with vapors, and I'd hit my head. It was like his face was rotting, and his eyes were white, like they'd lost all their color. Dead eyes. There you have it." I couldn't think what he meant. Dead eyes. The fire crackled, warming the room. Too warm. Warden lifted my chin, exposing my cut to the light. "Nashira will see this," I said. "She'll know." That can be remedied. How? No reply. Every time I asked how or why, he would seem to get bored of the conversation. He went to his desk and took out a metal cylinder, small enough to fit into a pocket. The word cyanide was printed in red across the side. He unwrapped three adhesive Steri-Strips. I stayed still as he applied them. Does it hurt? No. He took his hand from my face. I touched the strips. I saw a map in the house, I said. I know there's a train on Port Meadow. I need to know where the entrance to the tunnel is. And why would you need to know that? Because I want to leave. Before Nishira kills me. I see. Warden returned to his armchair. And you assume I will let you go? Yes. I do assume. I held up his snuffbox. Or you can safely assume that this will find its way to Nishira. The symbol caught the light. His fingers drummed on the chair. He didn't try to bargain. He just looked at me, his eyes burning softly. You cannot take the train, he said. Watch me. You misunderstand me. The train can only be activated by the Westminster Archon. It is programmed to come and go on particular dates, at particular times. Those times cannot be changed. It must bring food. The train is used only for human transportation. The food is delivered by couriers. So it won't come again until... I closed my eyes. The next bone season. In 2069. My dream of an easy escape unraveled. I'd have to cross the minefield after all. I urge you not to attempt a crossing on foot, he said, as if he'd read my thoughts. The MM used the woods as a hunting ground. Even with your gift, you will not last long. Not against a pack of them. I can't wait. I gripped the arm of the chair until my knuckles blanched. I have to leave. You know she's going to kill me. Of course she is. Now your gift has matured, she hungers for it. It will not be long before she strikes. I tensed. Matured? You possess 12 in the Citadel. I saw you. She has been waiting for you to reach your full potential. Did you tell her? She will find out, but not from me. What is said in this room will not go beyond it. Why? An overture to mutual trust. You went through my memories. Why should I trust you? Did I not show you my dreamscape? Yes, I said. Your cold, empty dreamscape. You're nothing but a hollow shell, aren't you? Abruptly, he got to his feet, went to the bookshelf, and took out an enormous old tome. My muscles drew into taut bars. Before I could say another word, he removed a thin booklet from inside and tossed it onto the table. I couldn't take my eyes off it. On the merits of unnaturalness. My copy, plastered in evidence of the syndicate. He'd had it all along. My dreamscape may be starved of its old life, but I do not see people in ranks, as the author of that pamphlet does. There is no Oneiromancer in there, no Rephaim. I do not see things in that light. He looked straight at me. I have lived with you for several months now. I know your history, even if I have learned it against your will. I did not intend to invade your privacy, but I wish to see what you are like. I wish to know you. I did not wish to treat you as a mere human. Lower, unworthy. That was unexpected. Why not? I said, not taking my eyes off him. Why do you care? That is my concern. I picked up on the merits and pressed it to my chest, like a child might hold a toy. It felt as if I'd saved Jackson's life. Warden watched me. You truly care about your Mime Lord, he said. You want to return to that life, to the Syndicate. There's more to Jackson than this pamphlet. I imagine there is. He came to sit beside me on the daybed. There was silence for a few minutes. A human and a Rephite, as different as night and day. Trapped in our own bell jar, like the withered flower. He picked up the snuffbox and removed a small vial of amaranth. You feel alone. He emptied it into a chalice. I feel it. Your solitude. I am alone. You miss Nick. He's my best friend. Of course I miss him. He was more than that. Your memories of him are extraordinarily detailed. Full of color. Full of life. You adored him. I was young. My tone was clipped. He seemed determined to keep prodding my most sensitive spot. You are still young. He wasn't letting this go. I have not seen all your memories. Something is missing. There's no point dwelling on things. I disagree. Everyone has bad memories. Why are you interested in mine? Memory is my lifeline. My route to the ether, just as dreamscapes are yours. He touched a gloved finger to my forehead. You asked to know me through my dreamscape. In return, I ask for your memories. His touch chilled me. I drew back. Warden looked at me for a while, assessing my reaction, before he stood and tugged on the bell pull. What are you doing? I said. You need to eat. He turned on the gramophone and stared out into the street. Michael was there before you could say dumb waiter. He listened to the orders Warden gave him. 10 minutes later, he was back with a tray, which he set across my lap. There was just enough to boost my strength. A milky cup of tea, a pot of sugar, tomato soup and warm bread. Thank you, I said. He gave me a quick smile before he made a complicated series of signs at Warden, who nodded. He bowed and left. Warden looked at me, watching to see if I would eat without coercion. I took a sip of tea. I remembered my grandmother giving me tea when I was very little, whenever I fell ill. She was a great believer in tea. I took a few bites of bread. Was he reading me now? Reading my emotions? Could he feel the memory calming me down? I tried to focus on him, to use the golden cord. But there was nothing. When I was finished, he took the tray and deposited it on the coffee table, before he came to sit beside me again. I cleared my throat. What did Michael say? That Nashira has summoned the remaining Sagas to her residence. He's quite the eavesdropper. He added, his tone slightly amused. He brings me a great deal of information from her halls. His supposed amaurosis keeps her blind to his comings and goings. So Michael was willing to sneak around. I would remember that. She's telling them about Kraz. I framed my temples with my fingers. I didn't mean to kill him, I just... He would have killed you. Kraz harbored a terrible hatred for humans. He planned when the day of our exposure came to lure human children into our control cities. He had a penchant for their small, fine bones. For cleromancy. I felt sick to the deepest pit of my stomach. Cleromancy involved the use of lots, or sort, which spirits arranged into pictures or pushed in a particular direction. All kinds of sort were used. Needles, dice, keys. A group called the osteomancers favored bones, but very old skeletons were usually handled out of respect for the dead. If Kraz had stolen the bones of children to practice cleromancy, I was glad I'd killed him. I am thankful that he is dead, Warden said. He was a terrible blight on this world. I didn't answer. You feel guilty, he stated. Afraid. Afraid of what? What I can do. I shook my head, exhausted. I keep killing. I don't want to be a weapon. Your gift is volatile, but it keeps you alive. It acts as your shield. It's not a shield. It's like a gun. I live on a hair trigger. I looked at the patterns on the carpet. I hurt people. That's my gift. Not deliberately. You did not always know what you could do. I let out a hollow laugh. Oh, I knew I could do it. I didn't know how, but I knew who was making people bleed. I knew who was giving people headaches. Whenever people sneered at me, whenever they brought up the Molly riots, they just hurt. All because I'd given them a mental push. I liked it, in a way, I said. Even when I was 10, I liked it. I liked getting my own back. It was my little secret. He kept his eyes on me. I'm not like sensors or mediums. I don't just use spirits for companionship or self-defense. I am one of them. Get it? I can die when I want, become a spirit when I want. It makes people afraid of me. It makes me afraid of them. You are different from them, yes. But that does not mean you should be afraid. Yes, it does. My spirit is dangerous. You are not afraid of danger, Paige. I think you thrive on it. You agreed to work for Jackson Hall, knowing that it would significantly reduce your lifespan, knowing the risk of detection. I needed the money. Your father works for Cyan. You did not need the money. I doubt you have ever touched it. Danger brings you closer to the ether, he said. That is why you take every opportunity to experience it. It wasn't that. I'm not some sort of adrenaline junkie. I wanted to be with other Voyants. Fresh anger seeped into my voice. I didn't want to live like a brainwashed Cyan schoolgirl. I wanted to be part of something. I wanted to matter. Can't you understand that? Those were not the only reasons. You thought about one person in particular. Don't. My lips shook. You thought about Nick. His gaze held hard. You loved him. You would have followed him anywhere. I don't want to talk about that. Why not? Because it's mine. It's private. Do you Oniromancers have any concept of privacy? You have kept it secret for far too long. He didn't touch me, but his look was almost as intimate. I cannot take the memory from you while you are awake. But the minute you fall asleep, I will read the pictures from your mind, and you will dream them, as you have before. That is the gift of the Oniromancer, to create a shared dream. Bet you never get bored. My voice was laced with contempt. Seeing people's dirty laundry. He ignored the dig. You can learn to keep me out, of course, but you would have to know my spirit almost as well as you know your own. And a spirit as old as mine is difficult to know. He paused. Or you could save yourself the trouble and let me see inside you. What good will come of it? This memory is a barrier. I have sensed it inside you, buried deep in your dreamscape. His eyes never left mine. Overcome it, and you will be free of it. Your spirit will be free of it. I took a deep breath. The offer shouldn't tempt me. Do I just have to sleep? Yes. I can help you with that. He scooped a handful of crisp brown leaves from the snuff box. This was what was in the pills. If I prepare an infusion, will you take it? I shrugged. What's one more dose? Warden regarded me for a few moments. Very well, he said. He left the chamber. I guessed there was a kitchen down below, where Michael worked. I rested my head on the cushions. A slow, cold tremor sidled through my chest, filling the space behind my ribs. I had hated Warden with a violent intensity. Hated him because of what he was, and because he seemed to understand me. I had thrived on hating him. Now I was about to show him my most private memory. I thought I knew what it was, but I couldn't be sure. I'd have to dream it. By the time Warden returned, a defiant certainty had surged up inside me. I took the glass cup from his hands. It was filled to the brim with a clear ochre liquid, like diluted honey. Three leaves floated on the surface. It tastes bitter, he warned, but it will allow me to see the memories more clearly. What did you see before? Fragments. Periods of silence. It depends how you felt at each individual moment, how strongly you felt it. How much that part of the memory still troubles you. I looked down at the tea. I don't think I'll need this then. It will make it easier for you. He was probably right. The mere thought of confronting such a memory was already making my hands shake. Feeling as if I was about to sign my life away all over again, I lifted the cup to my lips. Wait, I paused. Paige, you do not have to show me this memory. For your sake, I hope you do. I hope you can. But you can say no. I will respect your privacy. I wouldn't be so cruel, I said. Nothing's worse than a story without an end. Before he could reply, I drank the tea. Warden had lied. This stuff wasn't just bitter. It was the foulest thing I'd ever tasted, like a mouthful of metal shards. I decided in a heartbeat that I would rather drink bleach than touch salvia tea ever again. I choked on it. Warden took my face in his hands. Hold it down, Paige. Hold it. I tried. Some of it came back into the cup, but most of it went down. What now? I coughed. Wait. I didn't have to wait for long. I hunched over, shuddering as waves of nausea rolled over me. The taste was so pervasive I thought it would never leave my mouth. And then the lights went out. I fell back on the cushions, and I sank. Chapter 25. The Dissolution. We stood in a circle, like we might in a séance. 6 out of 7 seals. Nadine was going to kill someone. I could see it in every inch of her face. In the middle of the circle was Zeke Sines, tied with velvet ribbons to a chair, his head between his sister's hands. We'd been attacking his mind for hours, but no matter how much he struggled and groaned, Jax wouldn't relent. If his gift could be learned, it would be an asset to the gang. The ability to resist all external influence, both from spirits and other voyants. So he sat in his chair, smoking a cigar, waiting for one of us to break in. Jax had studied Zeke for a long time. The rest of us had been forgotten, left to our own criminal devices. Even after rigorous investigation, he hadn't predicted that our unreadable would be in so much pain when we attacked him. His dreamscape was resilient and opaque, impenetrable by spirits. We'd sent spool after spool to him, to no avail. His mind sent them ricocheting all over the room, like water off a marble. Like his new name, Black Diamond.
Come on, come on, you wretched rabble! Jax barked.
His fist hit the desk.
I want to hear him scream 3 times as loud as that.
He'd been playing Dance Macabre and drinking wine all day. Never a good sign. Eliza, pink-faced with the effort of controlling so many spirits, gave him a hard look. You wake up on the wrong side of the chaise longue, Jackson.
Again.
He's in pain, Nadine said, her cheeks flushed with anger.
Look at him! He can't take this!
I'm in pain, Nadine, agonized by your recalcitrance.
Deadly soft.
Don't make me get up, children. Do it again.
There was a short silence. Nadine gripped her brother's shoulders, her hair falling across her face. It was dark brown now, and shorter. It attracted less attention, but she hated it. She hated the Citadel. Most of all, she hated us. When nobody moved, Eliza called on one of her spirit aides, J.D., a 17th-century muse. When it jumped out of her dreamscape into the ether, the lights flickered.
I'll try J.D.
Her brow was pinched.
If an old spirit doesn't work, I don't think anything will. A poltergeist, perhaps?
Jack said, perfectly serious.
We are not using a geist on him.
Jax carried on smoking. Pity. On the other side of the room, Nick pulled the blinds down. He was appalled at what we were doing, but he couldn't stop it. Zeke couldn't take the suspense. His fevered eyes were on the spirit.
What are they doing, thee?
I don't know. Nadine fixed a cold stare on Jackson.
He needs rest. You set that spirit on him and I'll...
You what?
Smoke curled from Jackson's mouth.
Play me an angry tune. Please, be my guest. I do enjoy music from the soul.
Her chin puckered, but she didn't rise to the bait. She knew the punishment for disobeying Jackson. She had nowhere else to go, nowhere else to take her brother. Zeke shivered against her, as if he were younger than her, not 2 years older. Eliza glanced at Nadine, then at Jackson. On her silent command, the muse whipped forward. I didn't see it, but I felt it. And from Zeke's cry of agony... So did he. His head slammed back, and the muscles in his neck strained out.
Nadine's lips clamped together as she wrapped both arms around him.
I'm sorry. She rested her chin on his head. I'm so sorry, Zeke.
Old and determined, J.D. was naturally obstinate. It had been told that Zeke was going to hurt Eliza, and it fully intended to stop that from happening. Zeke's face shone with sweat and tears. He was almost choking.
Please, he said, no more.
Jackson, stop it, I snapped. Don't you think he's had enough? His eyebrows jumped towards his hairline.
Are you questioning me, Paige?
My courage faded. No.
In the Syndicate, you are expected to earn your keep. I am your mime lord, your protector, your employer. The man who keeps you from starving, like the wretched buskers.
He chucked a wad of money into the air, sending Frank Weaver's face fluttering across the carpet. It stared at us from every note.
Ezekiel has only had enough, when I say so, when I choose to give him freedom for the day. Do you think Hector would stop? Do you think Jimmy or the Abbess would just stop?
We don't work for them. Eliza looked shaken. She motioned to the spirit. Come on back, J.D. I'm safe. The spirit slunk away. Zeke put his head in his shaking hands.
I'm okay, he managed. I'm fine. I just need a minute.
You are not okay.
Nadine turned back to Jackson, who was lighting another cigar.
You preyed on us. You knew about the operation and made out like you were going to make it better. You said you'd fix him. You promised you'd fix him.
I said I would try. Jackson was unmoved. That I would experiment.
You're a liar. You're just like...
If this place is so terrible, then go, dear girl. The door is always open. His voice dropped a few notes. The door to the cold, dark streets. He blew a grey plume in her direction. I wonder how long it will take for the NVD to smoke you out. Nadine shook with anger.
I'm going to chat's.
She snatched her lace jacket.
No one is welcome to join me.
She grabbed her headphones and her purse before she stormed out, slamming the door behind her.
Dee,
Zeke started, but she didn't stop. I heard her kick something on her way down the stairs. Peter came shooting out through the wall, furious at being disturbed, and went to sulk in the corner. I think it's home time now, Captain, Eliza said firmly. We've been doing this for hours.
Wait.
Jax pointed a long finger in my direction. We haven't tried our secret weapon yet. When I frowned, he tilted his head.
Oh, come now, Paige. Don't play the fool. Break into his dreamscape for me.
We've discussed this. I was starting to get a headache.
I don't do break-ins.
You don't do them.
I see. I didn't realize you had a job description.
Oh, wait, I remember.
I didn't give you one.
He crushed his cigar against the ashtray.
We are clairvoyants. Unnaturals. Did you think we were going to be like Daddy, sitting in our little Barbican offices from 9 to 5, sipping tea from our little styrofoam cups?
All of a sudden he looked disgusted. Like he couldn't abide how amorotic people could be.
Some of us don't want styrofoam, Paige.
Some of us want silver and satin and sordid streets and spirits. I couldn't help but stare. He took a huge gulp of wine, his eyes fixed on the window. Eliza shook her head.
Okay, this is getting ridiculous. Maybe we should just... Who pays you?
She sighed. You do, Jackson.
Correct. I pay. You obey.
Now, be the saint you are and run upstairs and get Tanitsa for me. I want her to see the magic. With lips pursed tight, Eliza left the room. Zeke shot me a look of exhausted desperation. I forced myself to speak again.
Jax, I'm really not up to it right now. I think we all need some rest.
You have a few hours off tomorrow, honeybee.
He sounded absent-minded.
I can't break into dreamscapes, you know that.
Humor me. Try. Jackson poured himself some more wine. I've been waiting for this for years. A dreamwalker versus an unreadable.
the ultimate ethereal encounter. Never could I conceive of a more dangerous and daring happenstance.
Are you still speaking English?
No, Nick said. Every head turned towards him. He's speaking like a madman. After a short silence, Jackson raised his glass. An excellent diagnosis, Doctor. Cheers, he drank. Nick looked away. It was in the strained aftermath of that moment that Eliza returned with a clean syringe of adrenaline. With her was Denitsa Ponich, the final member of our septet. She'd grown up in the science citadel of Belgrade, but transferred to London to work as an engineer. Nick had been the one to headhunt her, having spied her aura at a drinks event for new recruits. She took great pride in the fact that none of us could pronounce her name. Or her surname. She was solid as a brick, with crimped reddish hair, worn in a low bun, and arms pitted with scars and burns. Her only soft spot was for waistcoats. Denitsa, my dear. Jackson beckoned her. Come and take a look at this, will you? What am I looking at? She said. My weapon. I exchanged a glance with Danny. She'd only been with us for a week, but she already knew what Jax was like. Looks like you're having a seance, she observed. Not today. He waved a hand. Begin. I had to bite my tongue to stop myself telling him where to stick it. He'd always buttered up the newcomers. Danny had a bright, hyperactive aura that he hadn't been able to identify, but as usual, he was convinced she would be something valuable. I sat down. Nick swabbed my arm and punched in the syringe. Do it, Jackson said. Read the unreadable. I gave my blood a minute to absorb the mix of drugs, then closed my eyes and felt for the ether. Zeke braced himself. I couldn't invade him, only caress his dreamscape, feel the faint nuances of its surface. But his mind was so sensitive that even a nudge could hurt him. I'd have to be careful. My spirit shifted. I registered all five of their dreamscapes, tinkling and shivering like wind chimes. Zeke's was different. He chimed in a darker note, a minor chord. I tried to catch a glimpse of him, a memory, a fear, but there was nothing. Where I'd normally see a shimmer of pictures, like a distorted old film, all I saw was black. His memories were sealed. I jerked from the ether when a hand grasped my shoulder. Zeke was trembling, his hands over his ears. Enough. Nick was behind me, pulling me to my feet. That's enough. She's not doing this. Jackson, I don't care what you pay me, you're paying me in blood diamonds. He threw the window open. Come on, Paige, you're taking a break. I was tired to my bones, and I would never refuse Nick. Jackson's eyes sent darts into my back. He'd be fine by tomorrow, once he'd finished all the wine. I swung myself out of the window and onto the drainpipe. My vision blurred. As soon as his feet hit the roof, Nick started to run. Today he was running fast, and running hard. Fortunately, there was still adrenaline in my veins, or I would never have kept up. We'd often do this. Take a derive through the city. In theory, London was everything I hated. Huge and grey and stern, raining 9 days out of 10. It roared and pumped and pounded like a human heart. But after 2 years of training with Nick, learning how to navigate the rooftops, the Citadel had become my haven. I could fly through traffic and over the heads of the NVD. I could race like blood through the mesh of streets and alleys. I was filled to the brim, bursting with life. Out here, if nowhere else. I was free. Nick dropped down to the street. We jogged along the busy road until we reached the corner of Leicester Square. Without stopping for breath, Nick began to climb the nearest building, right next to the Hippodrome Casino. There were plenty of handholds, windowsills and ledges and the like, but I doubted I could keep up. Even adrenaline couldn't make a dent in my fatigue. What are you doing, Nick? I need to clear my head. He sounded weary. In a casino. Above it. He held out a hand. Come on, Saltnose. You look like you're about to fall asleep. Yeah, well,
I didn't know I was going to have to give my spirit and my muscles a thrashing today. I let him haul me up to the first windowsill, earning a look from a girl with a cigarette. How far are we climbing? To the top of this building. If you can handle it, he added. What if I can't handle it? Fine. Jump up. He pulled my arms around his neck. And what's the golden rule? Don't look down.
Correct,
he said, imitating Jack's. I laughed. We reached the top without incident or injury. Nick had been climbing buildings since he could toddle. He found footholds where none seemed to exist. Soon we were back on the rooftops, the streets far below us. My feet fell on artificial grass. On my left was a small fountain, no water. And on my right, a bed of shriveled flowers. What is this place? Roof garden. I found it a few weeks ago. I've never seen it used, so I thought I'd make it my new bolt hole. Nick leaned on the railing. Sorry to snatch you like that, Sortnot. Tiles can get a little claustrophobic. Just a bit. We didn't talk about what had just happened. Nick got too frustrated by Jackson's tactics. He tossed me a cereal bar. We looked out at the dusky pink horizon, almost as if we were watching for ships. Paige, he said. Have you ever been in love? My hand shook. The mouthful seemed very difficult to swallow. My throat had closed up. I think so. Little cold chills ran up and down my sides. I rested my back on the railing. I mean, maybe. Why do you ask? Because I want to ask you what it's like. To try and work out whether or not I'm in love. I nodded, trying to create the impression that I was calm. In reality, something slow and unsettling was happening to my body. I was seeing tiny black dots. My head was feather-light. My palms were clammy and my heart was beating hard. Tell me, I said. His eyes stayed on the sunset. When you fall in love with someone, he said, do you feel protective of them? This was strange for two reasons. One, because I was in love with Nick. I had known that for a long time, even if I had never done anything about it. And two, because Nick was 27 and I was 18. It was as if our natural roles had been reversed. Yes, I looked down. At least I think so. I did. I do feel protective of him. Do you ever want to just touch them? All the time, I admitted, a little shyly. Or, more like, I want him to touch me. Even if it's just to hold you, I nodded, looking at him. Because I feel as if I understand this person, and I want them to be happy. But I don't know how to make them happy. In fact, I know that just by loving them, I will make them terribly unhappy. His brow creased the way book paper does. I don't know whether to risk even telling them, because I know how much unhappiness it will cause. Or I think I know. Is that important, Paige? To be happy? How can you think it's not important? Because I don't know whether honesty is better than happiness. Do we sacrifice honesty in order to be happy? Sometimes. But it's better to be honest, I think. Otherwise you're living a lie. I weighed the words, steering him towards telling me. Trying to ignore the shattering din in my head. Because you have to trust them. Yes. My eyes were hot. I tried to breathe slowly, but in my head, a terrible reality was dawning. Nick wasn't talking about me. Of course, he'd never actually said anything to suggest he felt the same way as I did. Not a word. But what about all the casual touches? All the hours of attention? All the times we'd run together? What about the last 2 years of my life, when I'd spent nearly every day and night in his company? Nick was staring at the sky. Hey, look, he said. What? He motioned to a star. Arcturus. I've never seen it that bright. The star had an orange tint, and it was huge and brilliant. I felt small enough to disappear. So, I said, trying to sound normal. Who is it? Who do you think you're in love with?
Nick brought his hand to his head. Zeke. At first I wasn't sure I'd heard him. Zeke. I turned my head to look at him. Zeke signs. Nick nodded. Do you think it's really hopeless? He asked softly. That he could love me. My face was losing sensation. You never said anything to me, I began. My chest was locking up. I didn't know. You couldn't have known. He ran a hand over his face. I can't help it, Paige. I know I could just find somebody else, but I can't even begin to look. I wouldn't know where to start. I think he's the most beautiful person in the world. I thought it was my imagination at first, but now he's been with us for a year. He closed his eyes. I can't deny it. I really care about him. Not me. I just sat there in silence, feeling as if somebody was pumping a numbing agent into my arteries. It wasn't me he loved. I think I could help him. There was real passion in his voice. I could help him face his past. I could help him remember things. He used to be a whisperer. I could help him hear the voices again. I wished I could hear voices. I wished I could hear spirits, so I could listen to them, and not to this. I had to focus on not crying. No matter what happened tonight, I could not, would not, cry. I'd be damned if I would cry. Nick had every right to love somebody else. Why shouldn't he? I had never said a word to him about how I felt. I ought to be happy for him. But some small, secret part of me had always hoped that he might feel the same. That he might have been waiting for the right moment to tell me. A moment like this. What do you get from his dreamscape? Nick was looking at me, waiting for a response. Anything? Just darkness. Maybe I could try. Maybe I could send him a picture. He smiled thinly. Or just talk to him, like a normal person. He'd listen, I said, if you told him. How do you know he doesn't feel the same way? I think he has enough to deal with. Besides, you know the rules. No commitment. Jackson would burst a blood vessel if he knew. Stuff Jackson. It's not fair for you to carry this. I've managed a year, Sortnos. I can manage longer. My throat was tight. He was right, of course. Jackson didn't let us commit. He didn't like relationships. Even if Nick had loved me, we couldn't have been together. But now the truth was staring me in the face. Now the dream had shattered. I could hardly breathe. This man was not mine. He had never been mine. And no matter how much I loved him, he would never be mine. Why didn't you ever tell me? I grasped the railing. I mean, I know it's none of my business, but I didn't want to worry you. You've had problems of your own to deal with. I knew Jax would be interested in you, but he's put you through hell and back. He still treats you like a shiny new toy. It makes me sorry I ever brought you into this. No, no, don't think that. I turned to him and squeezed his hand. Too tight. You saved me, Nick. Sooner or later I would have lost my mind. I had to know, or I would have always felt like an outsider. You made me feel like I was part of something. Part of a lot of things, actually. I'll never be able to repay you for that. Shock registered on his face. You look like you're going to cry. I'm not. I let go of his hand. Look, I have to go. I'm meeting someone. I wasn't. Paige, wait. Don't go. He grasped my wrist, pulled me back. I've upset you, haven't I? What is it? I'm not upset. You are. Please, just wait a second. I really have to go, Nick. You've never had to go when I needed you. I'm sorry. I pulled my blazer close. If you want my advice, you should go back to base and tell Zeke how you feel. If he's got even a single bit of sanity left in there, he'll say yes. I looked up at him with a sad smile. I know I would. And I saw it. First confusion, then disbelief, then dismay. He knew. Paige, he started. It's late. I swung myself over the railing, my hands trembling.
I'll see you on Monday, okay? No. Paige, wait. Wait! Nick, please. He closed his mouth, but his eyes were still wide. I climbed back down the building, leaving him to stand beneath the moon. It was only when I reached the bottom that the first and only tears came. I closed my eyes and breathed the night air. I don't know exactly how I got to 1-5. Maybe I took the underground. Maybe I walked. My father was still at work. He wasn't expecting me. I stood in the empty apartment, gazing at the skylight. For the first time since childhood, I wished for a mother, or a sister, or even a friend. A friend outside the seals. As it happened, I didn't have any of those things. I had no idea what to do, what to feel. What would an amorotic girl do in my situation? Spend a week in bed, most probably. But I wasn't an amorotic girl. And it wasn't as if I'd broken up with someone. Just with a dream. A childish dream. I thought back to my days at school, when I'd been the sole voyant among amorotics. Suzette, one of my only friends, had broken up with her boyfriend in our final year. I tried to remember what she'd done. She hadn't spent a week in bed, as I recalled. What had she done? Wait. I remembered. She'd sent me a text, asking me to go with her to a club. Want to dance my cares away, she'd said. I'd made an excuse, as I always did. This would be my night. I would dance my cares away. I would forget that it had ever happened. I would get rid of this pain. I stripped off my clothes, took a shower, then dried and straightened my hair. I put on lipstick and mascara and kohl. I dabbed a little perfume on my pulse points. I pinched my cheeks to make them pink. When I was done, I slipped a black lace dress on, stepped into a pair of open-toe heels, and left the apartment. The guard looked at me strangely as I passed. I took a cab. There was a flash house in the East End that Nadine frequented, with cheap mechs, and sometimes real illegal alcohol, served on weekdays. It was a rough part of 2-6, an area notorious for being one of the only safe places for boys to hang out. Even Jilly's didn't like to go there. A huge bouncer guarded the door. Wearing a suit and hat, he waved me through. It was dark and hot inside. The space was small, cramped, packed with sweating bodies. A bar ran the length of one wall, serving oxygen and mechs from different ends. To the right of the bar was a dance floor. The people were mostly amorotic hipster types, in tweed trousers, tiny hats and brightly colored neckties. I had no idea what I was doing there, watching amorotics jump around to deafening music, but that was what I wanted, to be spontaneous, to forget the real world. 9 years I had spent adoring Nick. I would make it a clean break. I wouldn't allow myself to stop and feel. I went to the oxygen bar and perched on a stool. The bartender looked me over, but didn't address me. He was buoyant, a seer. He wouldn't want to talk. But it didn't take long for someone else to notice me. There was a group of young men at the other end of the bar, probably students from USL. They were all amorotic, of course. Few voyants made it to university level. I was just about to order a shot of Floxy when one of them approached me. 19 or 20, he was clean-shaven and a little sunburned. Must have been to another citadel for his year abroad. Cyan Athens, perhaps. He wore a cap over his dark hair. Hey, he said above the music. You here by yourself? I nodded. He took a seat beside me. Reuben, he said, by way of introduction. Can I get you a drink? Mex, I said, if you don't mind. Not at all. He motioned to the bartender, who clearly knew him. Blood Mex Gresham. The bartender's brow was creased, but he kept his silence as he poured my blood mex. It was the most expensive of the alcohol substitutes, made with cherries, black grapes and plums. Reuben leaned in close to my ear. So, he said, what are you here for? No real reason. You don't have a boyfriend? Maybe. No. I just broke up with my girlfriend. And I was thinking when you walked in. Well, I thought stuff I probably shouldn't think when a pretty girl walks into a bar. But then I thought a girl as pretty as you would have a boyfriend with her. Am I right?
No,
I said. Just me. Gresham pushed my mechs across the surface of the bar. That'll be two, he said. Reuben handed him two gold coins. Am I to assume you're 18, young lady? I showed him my ID and he went back to cleaning out the glasses, but he kept an eye on me as I sipped my drink. I wondered what troubled him. My age, my appearance, my aura. Probably all three. I jerked back to reality when Reuben shifted closer. His breath smelled like apples.
Are you at the university?
He said.
No.
What do you do?
Oxygen bar.
He nodded, sipped his drink. I wasn't sure how to do it. To give the sign. Was there a sign? I looked right into his eyes, ran the toe of my shoe along his leg. It seemed to work. He glanced at his friends, who had gone back to their game of shots. You want to go somewhere? His voice was low, hoarse. It was now or never. I nodded. Reuben linked his fingers through mine and led me through the crowd. Gresham watched me, probably thinking what a minx I was. I became aware that Reuben wasn't leading me to my imagined dark corner. He was leading me to the toilets. At least, I thought he was until he guided me through another door, out into the staff car park. It was a tiny rectangular space, only able to hold six cars. Okay. He wanted privacy. That was good. Wasn't it? At least it meant he wasn't just showing off for his friends. Before I could so much as take a breath, Reuben pushed me up against the dirty brick wall. I smelled sweat and cigarettes. To my shock, he started to unbuckle his belt.
Wait, I said. I didn't mean...
Hey, come on. It's just a little fun. Besides, he dropped his belt. It's not like we're cheating. He kissed me. His lips were firm. A wet tongue thrust into my mouth, and I tasted artificial flavoring. I'd never been kissed before. I wasn't sure I liked it. He was right. Just a little fun. Of course it was. What could go wrong? Normal people did this, didn't they? They drank. They did stupid, reckless things. They had sex. This was just what I needed. Jax allowed us to do this. Just not to commit. I wasn't going to commit. No strings. Eliza did it. My head told me to stop. Why was I doing this? How had I ended up here, in the dark, with a stranger? It wouldn't prove anything. It wouldn't stop the pain. It would make it worse. But now Reuben was on his knees, pushing my dress up to my waist. He pressed a kiss to my bare stomach. You're so pretty. I didn't feel it. You never told me your name. He traced the edge of my underwear. I shivered. Eva, I said. The thought of sex with him repulsed me. I didn't know him. I didn't want him. But I reasoned it was because I still loved Nick, and I had to make myself stop loving him. I grabbed Reuben's hair and crushed my lips to his. He made a noise and pulled my legs around him. A little quiver shot through me. I'd never actually done it before. Wasn't it meant to be special, the first time? But I couldn't stop. I had to do this. The street lamp shone with a fitful light, blinding me. Reuben placed his hands against the brick wall. I had no idea what to expect. It was exhilarating. Then pain. Explosive, stunning pain. Like a fist had done a cruel uppercut into my stomach. Reuben had no idea what had just happened. I waited for it to pass, but it didn't. He noticed my tension.
You're okay?
I'm fine, I whispered. This your first time?
No, of course not.
He bent his head to my neck, kissing from my shoulder to my ear. Before he even tried to move, the pain came again, worse this time, a vicious, racking pain. Reuben drew back.
It is, he said.
It doesn't matter. Look, I just don't think I should.
Fine,
I shoved him away. Just leave me alone then. I don't want you. I don't want anyone. I pushed off the wall and stumbled back into the flash house, pulling down my dress. I only just made it to the toilet in time to throw up. Pain lashed through my thighs and stomach. I curled myself around the toilet bowl, coughing and sobbing. Never in my life had I felt so stupid. I thought of Nick. I thought of all the years I had spent thinking about him, wondering if he would ever come back to me. And I thought of him now, pictured his smile, how he'd looked after me. And it was useless. I just wanted him. I put my head in my arms and cried. Chapter 26. Change. The intensity of the memory knocked me out for a very long time. I had relived every detail of that night, down to the faintest tremor. I woke up to total darkness, with no idea what time or day it was. It's a sin to tell a lie, strained softly from the gramophone. There were so many memories I could have shown him. I had lived through the Molly riots, through my father's bereavement, through years of cruelty at the hands of science schoolgirls. Yet I'd shown him the night I was turned down by a boy I loved. It seemed so little, and so insignificant. But it was my one normal, human memory. The one time I had given myself to a stranger. The one and only time my heart had ever been broken. I didn't believe in hearts. I believed in dreamscapes and spirits. Those were what mattered. Those made money. But my heart had hurt that day. For the first time in my life, I'd been forced to acknowledge my heart, and acknowledge its fragility. It could be bruised. It could humiliate me. I was older now. Maybe I'd changed. Maybe I'd grown up. Grown stronger. I wasn't that girl on the brink of maturity, desperate to connect, to find someone to lean on. She was long gone. Now I was a weapon, a puppet to the machinations of others. I couldn't work out which was worse. A tongue of fire still tantalized the embers in the hearth. It cast light on the figure by the window. "Welcome back." I didn't reply. Warden glanced over his shoulder. "Go on," I said. "You must have something to say." "No, Paige." A moment passed in silence. "You think I was stupid." "You're right." I lifted my hands. I wanted to be seen. He looked into the fire. "I believe I understand why that memory affects you so deeply. It is at the heart of your greatest fear that there is nothing to you beyond your gift, beyond the dreamwalker. That is the part of you you see is truly valuable, your livelihood. You lost your other parts in Ireland. Now you rely on Jackson Hall, who treats you as his commodity. To him, you are nothing more than quick flesh grafted to a ghost, a priceless gift in human wrapping. But Nickney Gord showed you more than that." I was looking at him now. "That night opened your eyes. When you realized Nick loved another, you faced your greatest fear, that you would never be acknowledged as a human, as the sum of all your parts. Only as a curiosity. You had no choice but to show yourself otherwise. To find the person who would have you, someone who knew nothing of the Dreamwalker. That was all you had left." "Don't even think about pitying me," I said. "I do not pity you, but I do know what it feels like, to be wanted only for what you are. It won't happen again. But your solitude did not keep you safe, did it?" I looked away. I hated that he knew. I hated that I'd let him work me out. Warden came to sit beside me on the bed. "The mind of an amaurotic is like water. Bland, grey, transparent. Enough to sustain life, but no more. But a clairvoyant mind is more like oil. Richer in every way. And like oil and water, they can never truly mix." "You're saying that because he was amaurotic?" "Yes. At least there wasn't anything wrong with my body. I had never been brave enough to see a doctor about that night. Scion doctors were cold and unforgiving on such matters. Something occurred to me.
If buoyant minds are like oil, I weighed my words. What are your minds like? For a moment, I wasn't sure he was going to reply. Finally, in a thick, velvet undertone, he said one word. Fire. That single word sent a tremor through my skin. I thought of what oil and fire did together. Exploded. No, I couldn't think about him like that. He wasn't human. Whether or not he understood me was irrelevant. He was still my keeper. He was still a Rephite. He was everything he'd been at the beginning. Warden turned to face me. Paige, he said, there was another memory. Before you passed out.
What memory?
Blood. A great deal of it. I shook my head, too tired to think about it. Probably when my clairvoyance came out. The poltergeist had a lot of blood in her memories. No, I have seen that memory. There was far more blood in this one. All around you, choking you.
I have no idea what you're talking about. And I didn't. I really didn't.
Warden regarded me for a while. Sleep a little longer, he finally said. When you wake up tomorrow, put your mind to better things.
Like what?
Like escaping from this city. When the time comes, you must be ready.
So you're going to help me?
When he didn't answer, I lost my patience.
I've shown you everything of mine. My life, my memories. I still have no idea what your motives are. What do you want?
Well, Nashira has us both under her thumb. It is best that you know as little as possible. That way, if she interrogates you again, you can safely say that you have no knowledge of the matter.
What matter?
You are very persistent. Why do you think I'm still alive?
Because you are inured to danger.
He clasped his hands on his knees.
I cannot tell you about my motives, but I will tell you a little about the red flower, if you wish.
The offer took me by surprise.
Go on.
Do you know the story of Adonis? They don't teach the classics in science schools.
Of course. Forgive me.
Wait. I thought of Jax's stolen books. Jax loved mythology. He called it deliciously illicit.
Was he a god?
The beloved of Aphrodite. He was a youthful, beautiful mortal hunter. Aphrodite was so taken with his beauty, she preferred his company to even that of the other gods. Legend tells that her paramour, the war god Ares, grew so jealous of the pair that he turned himself into a boar and slaughtered Adonis. He died in Aphrodite's arms, and his blood stained the earth. As she cradled the body of her beloved, Aphrodite sprinkled nectar over his blood, and from the blood of Adonis sprang the anemone, a short-lived perennial flower, stained as red as the blood itself, and the spirit of Adonis was sent, like all spirits, to languish in the underworld. Zeus heard Aphrodite crying for her love, and out of pity for the goddess, he agreed to let Adonis spend half of the year in life, and half in death.
Warden looked at me.
Consider it, Paige. There may not be any such thing as monsters, but there are still some pockets of truth in the shrouds of your mythology.
Don't tell me you're gods.
I don't think I could stand the thought of Nashira being holy. We are many things, but holy is not one of them. He paused. I have said too much. You need rest.
I'm not tired.
Even so, you need to sleep. I have something to show you tomorrow night. I leaned back against the pillows. I did feel tired.
This doesn't mean I trust you,
I said. It just means I'm trying. Then I can ask for no more of you. He patted the sheets. Sleep well, little dreamer. I couldn't hold out any longer. I turned over and closed my eyes, still thinking of red flowers and gods. I woke to the sound of a knock. The sky outside was rosy, bloodshot. Warden stood by the fire, his hand on the mantelpiece. His gaze slashed towards the door.
Paige, he said. Hide, quickly.
I got out of bed and went straight to the door behind the drapes. I left it slightly ajar, pulling the red velvet over the gap, and listened. I could still see the fireplace. The chamber door unlocked and opened. Nashira stepped into the light of the fire.
She must have a key to his tower. Warden knelt, but did not complete the ritual. She ran her fingers over the bed.
Where is she?
Sleeping, Warden said. In her own room? Yes.
Liar. She sleeps here.
The sheets smell of her. Her bare fingers grasped his chin. Do you really want to go down that road?
I do not understand your meaning.
I think of nothing and no one but you.
Perhaps.
Her fingers tightened.
The chains still hang.
Do not think for a moment that I will hesitate to send you back to the house. Do not think for a moment that there will be a repeat of Bone Season 18. If there is, I will not spare a single life. Not even yours. Not this time. Do you understand me?
When he didn't reply, she struck him across the face. Hard.
I flinched.
Answer me.
I have had 20 years to reflect on my folly. You were right. Humans cannot be trusted. There was a brief silence. I am pleased to hear it. Her voice was softer. All will be well. We will have this tower all to ourselves soon. You can make good on your vow to me. She was insane. How could she go from hitting him to making that kind of overture?
Am I to understand? Warden said. That 40's time has run out.
I stayed absolutely still, listening.
She is ready. I know she took possession of 12 in the Citadel.
Your cousin told me.
She ran her finger under his chin. You have nurtured her gift well.
For you, my sovereign.
He looked up at her. Will you claim her in the shadows? Or will you show all of Sion your great power?
Either will suffice.
At last I will have the ability to dreamwalk. At last I will have the power to invade, to possess.
All thanks to you, my beloved Arcturus. She placed a small vial on the mantelpiece, and her voice grew cold again.
This will be your last dose of amaranth until the bicentenary. I believe you need time to reflect on your scars. To remember why you should look to the future, not to the past. I will suffer whatever you ask of me. You will not have to suffer for long. Soon we will have our bliss.
She turned towards the door. Take care of her, Arcturus. The door closed. Warden stood. For a moment I wasn't sure what he would do. Then he threw out a fist and smashed the glass urn on the mantelpiece. I went to my bed and listened to the silence. He wasn't my enemy. Not the enemy I thought he was. She'd said she would send him back to the house. Proof that he was involved in Bone Season 18. Proof of his betrayal. That was what Thuban had meant when he threatened Terrabel. They'd tried to help us and been punished for it. They'd chosen the wrong side. The losing side. I tossed and turned for hours. I couldn't stop thinking about their conversation. How she hit him. How she brought him to his knees, and how soon, very soon, she intended to get rid of me. I kicked the sheets off and lay in the dark with my eyes open. The realization had taken a long time, but now I understood. Warden was on my side. I thought of the scars on Terrabel's back, the ones Thuban Sargas had mentioned with that hint of cruelty. He and his family had scarred her. She and Warden were the scarred ones. Something terrible had happened in the house after that day, Novembertide of 2039. I didn't know Terrabel, but she had saved my life. I owed her, and I owed Warden for taking care of me. If there was one thing I couldn't bear, it was being beholden to someone. But when he spoke to me next, I would listen. I would hear him out. I sat up. No, not when he spoke to me next. Now, I had to talk to him. Trusting him was my only chance. I would not die here. I had to know once and for all what Arcturus Mzartan wanted. I had to know if he would help me. I got out of bed and went into the chamber. Empty. Outside, the rain thundered from black clouds. The grandfather clock chimed 4 in the morning. I picked up the note on the writing table. I have gone to the chapel. I will be back before dawn. To hell with sleep. I'd had enough of games, of crossing wires with him. I pulled on my boots and left the tower. The wind howled outside. There was a guard in the cloisters. I waited until she passed before I ran. The thunder and the darkness gave me cover, letting me slip past unnoticed. But above the rain, there swelled a new sound. Music. I followed it into another passage, where a vast door stood ajar. Beyond it was a small chapel, set apart from the rest of the building by an elaborate stone screen. Candlelight flickered in the darkness. There was someone up there, playing the organ. The sound rang in my ears, through my chest. A small door stood open in the screen. I went through it, up the steps. At the top was the organ. Warden sat at the bench with his back to me. The music resonated through the ranks of pipes, up to the ceiling, a sound that rose through the chapel, above it, a sound that surged with terrible regret. Nobody could play this without some degree of feeling. The music stopped. He turned his head. When he didn't say anything, I sat on the bench beside him. We sat in the dark, with only the light from his eyes and the candle. You should be sleeping. I've slept enough. I touched my fingers to the keys. I didn't know the Rephaim could play. We have mastered the art of mimicry over the years. That wasn't mimicry. That was you. There was a long silence. You have come to ask about your freedom, he said. That is what you want. Yes. Of course it is. You may not believe it, but it is what I desire most in the world. This place has afflicted me with a terrible wanderlust. I long for your fire, for the sights that you have seen. Yet here I am, 200 years after I arrived. Still a prisoner, though I masquerade as a king. I could empathize with his wanderlust, if nothing else. I was betrayed once. On the eve of Novembertide, when the uprising of Bone Season 18 was to begin, one human chose to betray us all. In exchange for freedom, the traitor sacrificed everyone in the city. He looked at me. You see why Nashira is not threatened by the prospect of a second rebellion. She believes you are all too self-seeking to come together. I did see. To have planned so much for human freedom, only to have us bite the hand that fought for us. No wonder he hadn't trusted me. No wonder he'd been so cold. But you, Paige, you threaten her. She knows you are one of the Seven Seals, that you are the Pale Dreamer. You have the power to bring the spirit of the Syndicate into the city. She fears that spirit. There is nothing to fear from it. It's full of petty criminals and backstabbers. That is dependent on its leaders. It has the potential to become something much greater. The Syndicate exists because of Sion. Sion exists because of the Rephaim, I said. You made your own enemy. I recognize the irony. So does Nashira. He turned to face me. Bone Season 18 rebelled because the prisoners were accustomed to being organized. There was strength and solidarity among them. We must resurrect that strength. And this time, we must not fail. He looked at the window. I must not fail. I didn't speak. I thought about reaching for his hand, inches from mine and the keys. In the end, I didn't take the risk. I want to leave, I said. That's all I want. To go back to the Citadel with as many people as possible. Then our aims are different. If we are to help one another, we must reconcile that difference. What do you want? To strike against the Sargas. To show them what it means to be afraid. I thought of Julian. I thought of Finn. And I thought of Lys, slipping away into Amaurosis. How do you propose to do that? I have one idea. His gaze flicked down to mine. I would like to show you something, if you are willing. I meant to reply, but I didn't. His chartreuse eyes grew warmer as he looked at me. I was close enough to feel his heat. I desire to trust you, he said. You can.